Welcome to the June 2008 meeting of VIBUG. We'll begin as usual with introductions, and we will start with the participants in the room, and we'll go to my left. I'm Amy Rule, VIBUG president.
I'm Steve Dresser, webmaster and sort of audio guy here.
Tim Cummings, other audio guy.
John Bennett.
Ed Gilbert.
Jeff Wilson.
Jeff Sussman.
And Ed Zillion, still using just DOS.
David Kingsbury.
And then I'd like for those people online to introduce themselves, just say where you're from, and also let us know if you could hear all of our introductions.
This is Jerry. I'd like to say hello to everyone. I'm located in Shrewsbury, Massachusetts, and I could hear most of the introductions, but I would ask people to kind of speak up a little bit, especially if you know you're a little further away from the mic. That will make it a lot easier, but hello to everyone, and it's great to be a participant.
This is Bob Gilday from Arlington, Mass., and Jerry's voice came in as strong as Amy's and stronger than the other people that checked in around the table. It's great to be president.
John Breida, New York. Sounds great. Hi, Bob. Hi, everybody.
At Price, Indiana. Sounds wonderful.
This is our maiden voyage. We've done a bit of testing with some of you prior to this time, but we've not done this. This is something I've been wanting to do for several years and are just delighted that we finally have the capacity to try it. We're hoping that this will offer the opportunity for those people who live in distant places, who don't have computer groups near them, or who are not close enough to get to Boston without taking 3 days vacation to do it, to participate and contribute to our meetings. I'm also hoping eventually that we are going to be able to hook up with some other computer groups around the country so we can provide even more content. For those people who may hear this later in an archive or who may be on and who are not current members, this is your opportunity to participate free. However, starting in September, this facility of online participation will be available to VIBUG members only. We do incur costs. We did purchase a mixer this past month. We're going to be purchasing some microphones. And we do incur, I had to pay for, you know, we have other expenses like paying for antivirus software, upgrades for the screen reader, et cetera, et cetera. And we do ask that since we are incurring additional expenses for this online facility, that people who want to participate in that way pay their membership dues of $20. If you want to pay your membership dues and you want to learn about joining VIBUG, the best way to get that information is to go to our webpage, www.vibug.org. Go to the Join the Mailing List link and you'll get all of the information you need, both the address of our treasurer, Jim Roberts, and the $20 fee. It is a calendar year fee, but we do ask that if you're going to participate online, that you contribute for 2008. The way that it will work is that we will get a current member list and we will provide passwords, and the password will change every month. We will provide a password. This time you were able to log in without a password, but when we begin to have participation limited to members only, we will provide a password every month to the membership. We ask that you not share that password, and we will require you to log in with your names so we know who's in the room. And if we find that somebody is passing out the password, obviously privileges will be revoked. But we hope not to do that. We want to make this as open a process as possible, but we want to make it limited to membership because our room space is limited. We only have a certain number of slots that were allotted. And right now we're doing this through the generosity of Talking Communities, and I want to thank them publicly for allowing us to have this virtual space. Does anybody have any questions about what I have said thus far? And I'm going to open it up first to the people online.
This is Jerry. How can I determine for sure if I'm a member already?
I'll let you know. I don't think you're on our member list for 2008, but I'll let you know via email later today. Couple of other announcements. I have purchased a new antivirus software. I got tired of dealing with Norton and configuring it, so I thought we had to renew, and it was going to cost us $49, even if we didn't want to pay to go to the more recent copy of Norton, which I think is probably less accessible than the old one. So I decided, I'd been reading some reviews, and I'd asked to the recent meeting what people thought, and I don't think any antivirus software is foolproof by any means, but I've been reading some recent reviews, and I decided to try PCCillin for Vibug, so I'll report to you back later and let you know how I like it. I will say this, it was very straightforward to install. It didn't install a lot of other stuff, and it was pretty easy to configure. We spent some money on that as well. Right now, I mentioned earlier, we did buy a new mixer, a mixer for Vibug. That cost us $149, and we're borrowing microphones courtesy of Tim Cummings this afternoon, and we will be purchasing some microphones for Vibug in the future.
For those who may not know the reason why we need a mixer, when you do a conference like this, one of the problems is if you just rely on using the internal microphone of the laptop that we're using, it would mean that nobody in the room would be heard. So we need a couple of microphones in the room, and a mixer is what allows you to have more than one microphone. So that's why we had to do that.
Yeah, and I think it's going to work out well. There are some glitches, but I do think it's going to work out well. I would encourage you to, if you haven't done so or haven't done so in a while, to go to the Vibug webpage and to peruse what we have available on the site. Not only can you read minutes of past meetings and so forth, but you can also listen to demonstrations that we've done. Usually every month we have a demonstration of adaptive hardware or software. I didn't do that today just because we were starting this online and I wanted to give an extended opportunity to check this out and see how it would work with our configuration here at National Braille Press and for our online participants. But we normally have a demonstration. You can, if you want to in the future, by the way, record these meetings yourself. If you press Alt-R, that will start the recording menu, and you will record a copy of this meeting on your hard drive of your computer. It's built into the software that we're using. The summer shows are coming up, ACB, NFB, AER, LCA. I know WindowEyes, I think GW Micro will be coming out with a new version of WindowEyes. I also anticipate that there may be an update soon for the Victor Reader Stream. I'm pretty sure there's going to be an update for the Braille Plus and Icon, and I'm sure there'll be lots of other new things as well. I will tell you that I've had an opportunity to see a bit of Braille display support for the Braille Plus. It's not ready yet, and it's not even in beta. I think it's more in alpha, but it is coming. So that's pretty exciting. The other thing to mention is that Code Factory has a competition going in which they're going to award several things, you know, free license to their software. They're going to award somebody an N82 phone and a copy of the KNFB Reader Mobile. All I know about it is if you go to codefactory.es, you can sign up to be in the drawing, and you don't have to be attending the conventions to do that. Pretty easy online form. I did it yesterday. Also, Saratech Corporation, the makers of System Access to Go, they're holding a drawing as well. And if you go to their website, you can be entered into that drawing, which will give you a package including, I think it's a year subscription of their System Access mobile network, and there, as well as a laptop and a Victor Reader Stream, and it's a package worth probably about $1,000 at least. Anyway, I entered into that, and they asked for comments as what you do with it, and part of what I do with it, I think, is to give some of this to Vibug, because we will be eventually using two computers, one to run the conference software and the other to use during demonstrations. So if I'm lucky, maybe we'll win and we'll have another free computer to use. But anyway, you can go to their webpage and enter into that drawing as well. I'm going to stop with announcements for the moment and open up the line to see if anybody has questions, but I'll ask the folks in the room. I have to remember to do this now. I've got to ask two audiences. Anybody in the room have any questions about announcements? How about anybody out there online have any questions?
Comment?
I'm afraid, but go ahead.
In the May, I think it is, issue of Smart Computing, there is a whole delightful string of articles on security, talking about antivirus, spyware, keylogger, and a whole bunch of things. Very interesting. That is available in both cassette form and on the new download digital talking book approach. I highly recommend it.
Thank you very much. Good comment. Any other questions or comments from the online gallery?
What did they charge you for PC Cylon? Do you happen to recall, or what's the deal? Is it a yearly subscription?
I think it was $47, Don. I have put in for automatic renewal, but it is a yearly subscription.
What's the website for that, Amy?
Okay, sounds good. Thank you.
Steve asked what the website. It's done by Trend Micro. That's the name of the company. So what I did, I just went to Google, typed in PC Cylon, which is C-I-L-L-I-N, and it came up with the Trend Micro site, and I just bought it from there.
That is also described a bit in that May article.
Good. I hope it got a good review.
Well, I'll tell you, you can be glad you didn't go with the paid version of AVG, because I got it for all three of my computers and started having problems with it. And even after the last upgrade of JAWS, which said they fixed the compatibility issues, there are still certain places that if I go to in the user interface, AVG, at least the interface crashes. I believe strongly that the antivirus protection is still going on after it crashes, but who knows?
I've also heard that AVG is not as good as it once was, and I've always been a little leery of it for that reason. And now I've got even more reason to be leery of it if it's crashing the interface.
Yeah, actually, I know somebody who had AVG, the paid version, and they ended up with a huge Trojan virus on their system and had to reformat the hard drive because it couldn't be cleaned easily.
You can disregard my question about my paid-up membership, because I checked my bank records and the last time I paid anything to ViBug was February of 2007. So, as the old saying goes, the check's in the mail.
Sounds good. Does anybody have any additional announcements that they want to make?
Just one thing that I stumbled upon actually yesterday, which might be of interest to people with cell phones, particularly those who are using Sprint. It turns out that in addition to the Tox software that exists for the Sprint phone, there is also a somewhat cheaper one of the LG phones, and I don't remember the model number of the phone, but it's one that Sprint has, which it turns out will talk. The catch is that you have to go into some menus and change from their visual theme to one of the other themes, and this is a feature that is not documented in the user guide, and possibly even Sprint customers don't know about it. But I got this information from Bob Hache, who was exploring this because he needed to get a Sprint phone that he could use, and this is the one that he found. So if you've been shying away from Sprint, but you really feel somehow that you want to stay with that, there is a possibility in that of getting a phone. And Amy, you might even remember the model number, because we had talked about it and you said you'd heard of it.
I have heard of it, but I don't remember the model number.
Is this part of the LG 4 and 5 series?
I thought it was a 570, I think. 570 might have been what it... You know, the trouble is, all of these phones have different numbers depending on what carrier you're talking about, so you can't just walk into any old place and grab an LG phone and hope that it's going to work, because LG makes them for Verizon, they make them for Sprint, they make them for AT&T, and they're all different. Eventually, I hear that's going to change, but it hasn't changed yet.
I have a little more info I can add to that, because I have Sprint, and I know that the IC 602 and 902 are accessible. They do have voice output.
Do you know how to enable them? Enable that?
No, I don't.
Okay. Because you don't have it.
Right.
Okay.
Of course, they work with the Direct Connect and the PCS network. And tomorrow morning, they will be releasing four new phones, which I'm assuming at least one of them will have some kind of speech output, because it's an LG phone, and I'll be looking at them in the morning to find out, because I'm sick of the one that I have and I'll be looking for a new one, so I can get back to you on that.
Great. If you can just email me that information, that would be terrific.
There'll be four new ones coming out tomorrow. A new toy that I got from them is a Compass 597 air card, and that connects via USB. You just plug it in and it loads all the software. You don't even need a disk. It loads the software. It's fairly accessible. You shouldn't have too many issues setting it up. It pretty much loads itself and you restart the machine and off you go. You need to cursor around a little bit with the JAWS cursor, and you can see most of what's available there.
The one caveat with all of these accessible cell phones that don't use the TOX software is that the accessibility will not be as good as you might get with the software, but it'll be better than no accessibility at all. So
right.
it's somewhat of a compromise, and you have to understand that going in.
Apparently there's a new LG phone. I think it's the 9900?
Yes.
That will do text.
But
will
that's a Verizon specific.
Yes, that's Verizon specifically.
And you always have to know that when you look at these things. You have to know which carrier you're dealing with.
I'm going to open it up for the online participants in case any of them have comments.
I assume that the LG phones for Sprint is going to be the usual typical top-level menu access. There are also other options on Sprint if you want more of a PDA type phone that runs Pocket PC or something. You can get phones that will run with Tox or Mobile Speak Pocket, such as the PC 6800 the Sprint version or the VX 6800 Verizon version. Just on a side note, as where Verizon's concerned, they've come out with the VX 6900. So if you want a 6800, look on eBay or get them, because Verizon, I think, is looking to squelch those phones, because even though they just came out in January, they have Wi-Fi enabled. And Verizon has decided that they'd rather put out the 6900 with Wi-Fi disabled so that you have to pay for their broadband plans, no ifs, ands, or buts about it. Thank you, Verizon. And the only other announcement, which is totally off topic, I wanted to squeeze in earlier, but I couldn't get in, is that there's a new version of SpyBot Search and Destroy, speaking of virus software and spyware software, 1.6. I haven't seen it, but there's supposed to be many more accessibility features built into it, so I just thought I'd throw it out there.
I recently purchased a used Motorola Q and bought Mobile Speak. I like it much better than I ever thought I would. I had held off all this time on upgrading to a PDA-type phone, and it continued to use my Verizon 8350, which did okay, but like Don said, it was the top-level menus, and then things stopped. But with this Motorola Q, I'm really delighted with it. I can actually go online. If I wanted to, I could check my email. I did that once just to see if I could, although it was very cumbersome. But I have a question on that. I'm curious to know if anyone in this group who is using a PDA is also using a folding Bluetooth keyboard, and if so, if you could give me any recommendations. I'm not sure whether it's one of those things that I think will be wonderful until I get it, and then I'll use it once and forget about it, or whether it really will have some value for me. So I'm curious to hear from anyone who's been using one.
Anybody here use one? I don't have one myself. I think the one I've heard the most about is called the Think Outside keyboard, I've seen it. There's another one, I think, called the Targus keyboard that some people have used, but I haven't bought one myself.
I've used the Think Outside Stowaway. I don't know, there's a couple of different models of it. I don't remember the model I have or what the differences are. I think they're probably very slight. And I've used it with a Dell X51V as in Victor. If you're going to go PDA access, it's very, very nice. I found it very easy to type on and type on rapidly. But today, some of the phones like the 6800, from what I'm told, their little built-in keyboards are fairly easy to use, so maybe even the stowaway is not as necessary as it may have once been. But boy, when it folds up and it comes in its own little leather case, you can stick it right in a suit jacket pocket or something like that with no problem at all.
What comes to mind as we're all talking is that maybe sometime soon we ought to do another cell phone meeting where we talk about cell phones.
Yeah, because that's one of those things that constantly changes.
Yep, it evolves. So maybe we'll plan that for the fall and have people who use the different companies. And I was interested in your air card discussion, for example. I'd love to see how that works. I don't have a separate keyboard. Jerry, I used to have a Pocket PC phone, and I lost it one expensive evening. And 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 now I've switched to a smartphone, but it does, the smartphone I have does have a slide-out keyboard as well as a regular touch-tone keypad. And I can use that fairly well. But I do think that something like the Think Outside is easier to use and much bigger than the tiny keyboard that slides under my phone.
Yeah, this Motorola Q also has a keyboard on it, pretty much full QWERTY keyboard. And I can use it well enough to send a text message or something like that, but I wouldn't want to type anything very long on it because the keys are small enough that you can't put both hands on the home row at the same time, that's for sure.
I think you're supposed to use your thumbs. I mean, that's the conventional thing in the cell phone world. Everybody uses their thumbs.
Any more questions or discussion about cell phones, cell phone keyboards, etc., etc.? Okay, anybody have other discussion items?
The docking station for the Braille Plus. Do we have any information on that, when that is coming out?
It has not come out. The Icon docking station has come out. They began shipping the docking station for the Icon. The docking station for the Icon has come out. They started shipping around May 21st, I believe. And it has, USB, additional USBs, battery, charging capability,
Ethernet,
and a full keyboard
and big speakers.
But it, and a bunch of people I've seen on the list have it, and I know somebody personally who has it, and I'm going to be seeing it next Wednesday. My understanding is that some of the reading functions on it are not working totally yet, so there's still got a few bugs in it. But the docking station for the Braille Plus, which is going to be slightly different from that of the Icon, because it's a slightly different shape, the molds had to be made differently. So we're hoping, APH last said it would come out in the summer. I'm thinking more fall.
And I thought I'd heard that too, late fall maybe.
I think fall is more likely.
Do we have any idea how much it costs?
I don't know what they're going to charge. It got a little kludgy because people who bought the Icon when it first came out were going to be given a break on the docking station. So I think they only had to pay $250. But I think it'll probably be $400 or so, probably.
If they get the same break.
I don't think people who bought the Braille Plus will get any kind of a $250 break. That was just for Icon owners. They haven't announced a price. APH has not yet announced one, but I'll bet it's $400. But anyway, it's going to be, it's an expensive add-on, but it allows a lot more functionality.
And one of the big things
is under $2,000 or close to $2,000 with the Braille Plus.
Right.
Well, that's true.
Still a good deal.
Still a good deal.
What's nice, too, is that you really do get added battery life, because they're talking 12 to 15 hours with the big battery that's on the docking station, and you can't get anything close to that with the Braille Plus.
Now, one thing I have heard is that the charger for the docking station is heavy and big.
Well, because it's doing double duty.
Right, but that it's just very large, and it weighs about a pound.
I suspect that you probably don't even want to carry that around with you if you don't have to. And the docking station, I think, is going to be primarily for use in a fixed location where you really want to be able to have a little bit more power, do Ethernet and stuff like that. If you're thinking of buying it for traveling, I don't think that's going to make a lot of sense. Especially if you have a Braille display as well. That's going to...
Yeah.
And what some people have asked on the list, and which I think also doesn't make a lot of sense, is will there be a Braille keyboard docking station for the Braille Plus? And I have a feeling the answer to that's going to be no, because the Braille Plus already has a Braille keyboard. With the Icon, you needed a keyboard, period, because the Icon has no keyboard except for the keypad. And so that was one of the big attractions for a docking station for the Icon, was that you actually had a full keyboard. But for the Braille Plus, it's a little different world.
One additional thing I can tell you that they are working on a spreadsheet program for the Braille Plus and the Icon. Many of you were here, or you certainly have the opportunity to listen to the demonstration that we did of the Braille Plus back in April, but I will also be doing a demonstration for the Tech Talk audience on accessibleworld.org in August, thanks to an invitation from Pat Price. Any other announcements?
This is kind of a warning. APH has just come out with a deal that they are selling, until July, they are selling their Braille and Speak Scholar, which is similar to the Braille and Speak, kind of a stripped-down version for $375. So I just bought one recently because I figured it would be good to have as a backup. I would say to people, don't. I learned from Steve and from talking to Brian Marge and some other people and then from my own experience that they are very, very buggy and have serious problems. Like, for example, you'll be typing along and all of a sudden your speech will die and you'll have to do a hard reset or work.
It actually is even worse than that. Marcia has had several students that have had them, or a couple of students that have had them, and generally speaking, they don't run for more than a month without having to be sent back. And it's all kinds of things. I mean, files suddenly disappear. If it were just speech, it'd be one thing, but, you know, files disappear and you can't find them. I mean, just all kinds of really nasty stuff that goes on with them. And APH is quite good about replacing them, but still, the issue is that if you have to keep getting a new one, and it happens about every month, from a practical point of view, that's really not a good thing.
I'm going to open up the mic for the people who are joining us virtually to see if any of them have questions while the rest of us cough.
Is there a backup hard drive on the docking station?
No, there's no backup hard drive on the docking station. Speaking of hard drives for the Braille Plus and the Icon, Icons now ship with a 40-gig hard drive rather than the 30. And they will, if you want to send in your Icon, and this is Icons only, if you want to send in your Icon, they will take your 30-gig hard drive out, put it in an enclosure, and put a 40-gig into your unit so that you will have both. I think it costs $250 to do that, but they will do that. I have heard of no increased hard drive capacity for the Braille Plus as of yet. Couple things. GW Micro now has a demonstration, a video demonstration on the website of the SenseView, the portable CCTV. And another announcement from GW Micro is that they are releasing, and I believe it's going to be released next week or maybe the week after, the new Braille Sense Plus, which is their latest in the note taker line. Much smaller, a lot of built-in Wi-Fi and other things. You could probably learn more if you go to their website.
Hey, Bill Rader here. Hi.
Oh,
good
my
morning,
goodness.
Everybody. Good afternoon, everybody.
Hey, Bill, how are you?
I'm well.
Bill, you may not, I don't know whether you know this or not, we are having our first online presentation.
Yeah, I knew that.
Okay.
I think that's very exciting. Yeah. Congratulations.
For anybody who doesn't know, Bill Rader is the recently retired president of National Braille Press. And without Bill's generosity, Vibug wouldn't have a home. So delighted to see you and welcome. Nice to see you back for a meeting. Bill usually graces us with his presence about once a year. And
I think in my retired state, I've got to finally become a little more cyber nimble, and so I might be seeing you a little more often.
Any other announcements for those people who are not on our email list who want to be? Go to the Vibug page again and put yourself on the email list. There's a form you fill out, and it will automatically get sent over, and then we will add you to the email list, and that's the only way you get notices now. We did, at the end of last year, after sending out announcements, take people off who did not validate and verify their information. So if you fell off the wagon and you want to get back on our announcement list, we get very few announcements from us each month. Please do that.
The link for that, by the way, is right at the top of the page. In fact, I think it may very well be the first link that you come to that says, you know, click here to. So even if you're looking at it in the links list, it'll say click here to join the Vibug email list, or words to that effect.
Yeah.
Got a colleague who's looking for an accessible GPS. He lives in England. Does anybody know a product, company, that has some kind of audio GPS?
Does he have a note taker?
I don't know.
Is he blind?
Yes, he is.
Okay. First thing to find out is whether he has any kind of a note taker or an accessible cell phone. Find that out. There are lots of options out there. If he has a note taker, both the Braille Note, the PacMate, and the Braille Sense now will have GPS capabilities with their note takers. There's also something called Wayfinder GPS that's available on some accessible cell phones.
One issue for blind people with GPS, most off-the-shelf GPS systems are made with the assumption that you're going to be driving someplace, so their pedestrian stuff is not very well developed.
The incident that prompted this was a taxi ride that put him in the wrong part of London.
He could conceivably benefit from off-the-shelf software that was meant for riding in a car, if that's what he was looking for. But if he's also looking to be able to walk places and plan routes and stuff like that, then he's probably going to do better with the products that are specifically developed for blind people, which would be either things from Sendero, S-E-N-D-E-R-O, and their website is www.sendero.com. And they will tell you what you go there, you'll find out what they have for all sorts of things. Also, HumanWare makes a device called the Trekker, which is a standalone unit that's a little bit less money, and they also now have something called, what's the new?
The Breeze.
Yes.
And that's supposed to be even less than the Trekker.
Yeah, it doesn't give you the option to map out routes and do virtual navigation, but it does. It's sort of stripped down version. But again, the first thing to find out is whether he needs a standalone or some kind of a note taker.
And I mean, he should probably talk to people
in England.
I mean, that's probably better than
talking I agree,
to Americans about what's best to use over there. I mean, they would be the experts.
Because I don't know which maps would be good in the UK.
Yeah, and that's another issue entirely.
And the cell networks, too.
Different. Anybody else have a computer question?
A number of months ago, we had a discussion about the TV converter boxes, and I did a lot of reading on the internet, and Zenith is the one that I guess is most friendly to blind people. So I was very insistent that I wanted Zenith. Big mistake, because nobody is selling Zenith, and I've been trying to call them, the customer service, and they give you lists of, well, try Radio Shack and this and that, and then you call, and nobody has it. Finally, I managed to find it at Circuit City, although I don't know why they kept telling me they don't have it. They have it in the store, but you have to go to the store, otherwise they don't tell you they have it. I bought two of them, haven't taken them out of the box yet. Just want to let you know, the manual is not available on their website. But if you do call their customer service on the phone, they will send you the PDF manual as an attachment. I do have it. It is speech accessible.
If you poke around on the web, there are a few places that sell mail order, but Circuit City really does seem to be the only place that's selling it in the store. Their website will tell you which stores have it in stock, and I've been successful using their web indicator, but I kind of doubt that their site is accessible.
No, I've been on the Circuit City website, but you can't rely on their stock indicators. You do have to call the store because it never agrees with the website.
And what's better about the Zenith box?
For almost everything, there is no audio feedback, and I'll give you the exception in a second. But everything you want to do is accessible through very definite keystrokes on the remote, and it's only a few of them, so you should be able to do most everything. One audible thing that's interesting is they have a signal meter. There's a key on the remote called signal. If you press it, it will give you a beep.
Yeah,
which increases with frequency according to how good your reception is. That's really helpful when you're adjusting the antenna, and they are not looking directly at the screen to see. And the other thing is that the Best Buy NSDXA1 is exactly the same thing. Some people have torn them apart and looked at the chips. The only difference is that the Circuit City has a support number on it, which I have found they helped me. I was very happy with my experience with them. Best Buy does not have that. But everything else about it is exactly the same.
I believe, and I've been reading too many websites lately, but I believe NFB is going to have something about the accessibility of these boxes at their convention. And I am going to be working there at the convention. So I will check it out and see what I can find and bring back some additional information if I get any.
I just bought a new laptop with Vista. A couple of weeks ago. It wasn't my choice, but I have the Vista. It's actually going a little better than I thought. But there's this one thing when I'm, say, in lists of documents or just my lists of emails, that this thing called Navigator or something, bar or something, just pops up out of nowhere. I can't do anything anymore. And I'm wondering if anyone knows sort of what it is, why it pops up, and how I could, if it does have some usefulness, but then also how I could just sort of get rid of it.
When you do buy a machine with Vista on it, you can have downgrade rights. If you don't like Vista, you can go down to XP Pro or Home or whatever.
Be careful. That's not completely true. If you buy the
some of the business versions of Vista you can downgrade. Right. But you can't downgrade, for example, the home version.
Well, let's get back to David's question first and see if anybody has an answer to that, and then we'll talk about downgrading.
And are you using JAWS or Zoom Text or what?
JAWS 9. Yeah.
You might want to run it by Freedom.
Will Alt F4 kill it?
Well, Alt F4, I guess, will kill the whole program, too. I mean, it throws me out of Outlook or whatever.
The problem with those things is typically Alt F4 will only kill the window that currently has the focus.
But John,
the problem with a lot of this stuff is that these visual navigation type things
are within that.
They get on top of everything else that you have, and you don't know then whether you're in the actual visual window or that it's just there keeping the screen reader from seeing the things that you want to. So when you do an Alt F4, you may end up killing the very program that you were trying to run.
In fact,
still having the visual navigator.
Yeah. No, but what I have been doing is doing the Alt F4, and that, say, if I'm out of Outlook, it does throw me out of Outlook. And then I go back into Outlook, and that's how I get back in to see.
Do you know
the
what the navigation bar says? Does it say anything when it pops up?
No, just sort of navigation bar, and then I can't, you know, I up arrow, down arrow to try to find my lists and this and that. I'm playing with it. I'm like maybe tabbing a little bit and seeing.
I have a couple of suggestions that may or may not work because I don't have Vista. You could try hitting Escape and see if that does anything. Use your JAWS cursor, which is the minus on the numpad, and see if you can find where it says navigation bar. And if you arrow to the right by using your numpad arrows, sometimes there will be a close symbol, which you could then find with your JAWS cursor and then route the PC to JAWS and see if that closes it. The other thing that you could do is to go into your view menu.
No, it didn't work. But the first thing I did was go into the view menu and try to turn it back into, you know, lists or icons or something.
And you couldn't?
Wouldn't respond to that.
Okay.
No. It's more of an annoyance than something else. But very nice thing to say about Vista, and I'd heard about this, is this right on the start menu, there's this search function, and it's very, very nice. Mm-hmm. It's really, really nice.
Dell, for one, is discontinuing the ability to order with XP on some versions of their computers now, has already discontinued on some. And I think by June 30th may discontinue that option on virtually all, except for business versions.
Yeah, business versions, the low-end business versions.
That you can buy if you're a corporation.
And that's mostly been because the corporations themselves have screamed bloody murder at being forced to go to Vista, and Microsoft has actually had to reassess their plan to pull the plug as of June 30th, so they're kind of giving lukewarm recognition to the fact that they screwed up, which is usually what they do.
Can I offer a tip that I learned that I thought was extremely helpful?
Sure.
I wonder how many of you realize that if you're running Office 2003, you already own an OCR function. Very similar to the Kurzweil function, for which you have to pay $1,000. You have a virtual printer in your system called Microsoft Document Imager. It's a kind of a poor competitor to PDF format. I don't think anybody uses it, not that I know of. But if you attempt to send a document from that printer to Word, it will automatically perform OCR on a graphical document and convert it to a Word document. And it's amazingly effective. What I've been told is that Microsoft dropped it in Office 2007. The printer's still there. The OCR function is gone.
There are a number of academic documents that are in PDF format that are in image.
That's right.
PDF format.
JAWS will say empty document.
Right.
It's not really an empty document.
Well, he actually uses HAL, but in Office 2003,
yes,
Microsoft Document Imager.
Yeah, when you have your PDF document on your screen, go to print the document. Control-P. Then you get the dialog box. There's a combo box which lists all of the printers on your system. And you probably have several virtual printers. Scroll the combo box until you find Microsoft Document Imager. Then just print the PDF document into that printer.
What you're doing, John, is you're printing it to an OCR engine that is turning it into a Word document, which you can then open in Word.
I'm just trying to get through the steps so I can...
It's two separate steps. First, you have to print it.
Yeah.
Your screen will look identical to the PDF document. What you have now is just another brand of a inaccessible digital document which is graphic. Now you're on the Microsoft Document Imager menu bar, and that's a different menu bar from the PDF menu. Go to Tools, Alt-T, and one of the things on Tools is send this document to Word. When you click on that, you will get a dialog box saying, wait a minute, I can't do this unless I perform OCR first. Is it okay with you if I do OCR?
Perfect.
You just say yes. The next thing you know, Word opens, and there's your document in Word.
Any other computer questions?
I recently came across something in Gmail today, which I don't know if it's new, but there's now an option on the main inbox screen to set basic HTML as default. So then when you launch it, you don't have to click the basic HTML.
Every time.
One other thing I wanted to mention, for those of you who may be interested in construction of websites and in construction of forms, survey forms in particular, there's going to be a free seminar from EASI on creating accessible survey forms. And you, if you go to the EASI website, you can sign up.
I'm going to work with kids this summer, and every year they want to create email accounts on the web. And I've done that with Yahoo. Mm-hmm. Is Gmail better for this? I mean, Gmail or Hotmail, or what is the best in terms of accessibility? And for, you know, sometimes you have to, on Yahoo, you have to recognize an image again.
Capture.
And things like a capture, right. So what is in people's view, if you have done that, the best?
When you say email accounts, you mean on the web, meaning
yes.
Web mail, as opposed to using
free.
An email.
Correct. If they
product.
Don't, if they don't have an internet provider, but they want, like my kids all have their like Yahoo accounts. You know, they can then go to any computer and you know use
yeah.
Webmail. I have done this with Yahoo a bunch of times for kids, but I was just wondering what the general. Consensus is.
Anybody use webmail here?
I do all the
time.
Yeah. Yahoo has a toll-free number that blind people can call. They will set up the account for you and bypass the captcha.
And Gmail has an audio captcha. And with the basic HTML, Gmail is pretty good. And Gmail will also tie them into more services. But the, I mean, then again, if all their friends are on Yahoo, they may want to use that with the chat and different, you know, but they're both usable. I know people that use both.
I find Gmail a little easier, though a couple of times I've tried it. I mean, I find that a little less cluttered than Yahoo. I would stay away from Hotmail more and more because there's so much spam on Hotmail. If you have a Hotmail account, that some providers are now automatically filtering and refusing any email that comes from a Hotmail account. Just because there's been so much spam associated with it. It's not whether you get spam as a Hotmail subscriber.
Oh.
It's that your messages may not go through.
As far as I know, Hotmail does not offer a POP3 service. So if you want to use Outlook, it might not work with Hotmail at all. I'm using Yahoo. In the past week, they changed their front end. I describe it's a little bit clunky, a few more keystrokes you got to use to do things that used to be a little easier. I mean, it's still accessible. One of the questions I wanted to ask is I often get email threads, like four or five emails where people are answering somebody else's comment, and in my inbox is like five messages. So I read the first message, and I read the entire thread. I want to delete the entire thread in one step, but I have to go down, delete, 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 delete. I understand that Gmail has a feature where you can delete an entire thread in one step. I haven't seen it. Does anybody know if that's doable?
Yes, it sorts all the replies into basically you'll open a message and you can read them or just delete the whole thing in one step. They call it conversations.
Cool.
Let's say there's 30 messages in a thread. You could delete manually like three of them and keep 27 of them. Mm. Or with one step, you could just delete all 30.
Including the ones that arrive in the future.
If they arrive in the future, then it'll just start
it
again.
It just reopens the thread.
The only thing I can say about Gmail is that in the beginning when you set it up, it looks really overwhelming. But if you work with it really for like a day or two, it becomes a breeze.
AOL Mail has also revamped their accessibility recently.
Yeah, it's supposed to be pretty good now.
Yeah, and I think they have an accessible spell checker. I've never really tried it, but the Yahoo or the Gmail spell checker with JAWS, I don't know if it works. But with the AOL one, it definitely works.
I don't know either, but I've noticed in Gmail that the spell checker has been automatically working for me from time in the past couple of weeks from time to time. And it seems to work the same way it does in Word. That is right-click, and it gives you options, and that was a pleasant surprise.
I used to have a Hotmail account years ago, and I could use this Hotmail account from within Outlook Express, and then at some point they disabled that,
they're
unfortunately.
Doing that at the end of the month, June 30th. No more Outlook Express access to Hotmail.
Can this be done with other things like Yahoo?
But with Gmail, you can get it for free, either POP3 or IMAP.
Okay.
Mecca, it's been some time, but my experience with setting up POP3 with Gmail was troublesome, let's say.
Well, there's a lot of steps. You have to sometimes fill in port numbers.
Yeah.
No, you want to give yourself some time.
It has gotten easier with the new release of JAWS and with Gmail.
I've got a question.
Okay.
As Amy mentioned, I've recently retired from the press, and I still use my press account. I've only changed it from B-Rader to Bill-Rader at NBP. And at some point, I will go out and engage the services of some other provider. Is there a general preference among you guys, Comcast versus Verizon versus...
Where do you get your internet service through?
Verizon.
Then if you're already getting your internet service through Verizon, you automatically have access to, it may not be set up yet for you, but you automatically have a Verizon email account.
In which you can create at least 3 separate boxes if you so choose.
9 of them with each account.
You could create up to 9 accounts. Verizon would just be your service provider, so whatever, like you use Outlook, correct?
Right.
Okay.
Outlook Express.
Okay. You use Outlook Express, so you would be able to use, to set up your Verizon email with Outlook Express, and you'd be fine.
Yeah.
You'd have the same interface as you have now.
Because you're paying for it anyway. You might as well use what they're giving you, and I don't, I've been using Verizon ever since I got up here, and I've had no problem with it at all.
What do I need to do with them in order to access my email from someone else's machine?
You would need to go to the Verizon website, and the Verizon website will have, you would need to sign in with a username and password,
mm-hmm.
which would be the username and password you have, you know, for your email account, and then you would be able to read your messages on the web.
You'll have an on-screen menu that you can choose from to do whatever you want to do.
To read your, you know, to get your email and read your new email.
I have a question for the technical people there. If Bill Rader is going to get a new laptop, should he ask for XP Home, XP Pro, XP Media Center, since Media Center might have a few more audio capabilities than the others do?
I think XP Pro probably has a few more security bells and whistles that are nice, but I don't think it would matter particularly. The software that he uses would work equally well on any of those systems. Home and Pro, the interface is pretty much the same, and even with Media Center, it's not that different. It just
I've never heard of this. Media what?
Media Center, Bill. That's what I have at home. It has a few more media features, and like I have a TV tuner card that I have in my system, so I can watch TV on my computer if I want to.
Can you record with it, Amy?
Can I record TV and stuff?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And do you hook it up to your cable or just an antenna?
No, I have it hooked up to my cable. I took the cable line and put a splitter on it, so I've got one hooked to the computer and the other hooked to the cable for the TV. And, I can't get the premium channels, you know, on the cable. I can't get those, but everything else I can get. And I can record TV. What's really cool is that I can get the guide up, so if I want to, you know, I can go by channel or I can go by time period and it says what's on.
On your computer.
On the computer.
Can you do it like by show?
Well, no, you do it by time.
Oh.
You do it by time or by, like, it's in, think of like, almost like an, it almost looks like an Excel spreadsheet. So depending upon what you, you know, if you click on the, you can either look at the channel and go across and see what's on within like a 2-hour time frame, or you can go from channel to channel and then see what's on, and then go over and see what's on. It's very cool. Some of the Media Center functionality is not screen reader friendly. So, and it depends upon the screen reader you use too, because one of the things I found was that Windows guys actually reads some of the Media Center stuff better than JAWS does. Okay, my computer had the TV tuner card installed in it when I bought it, so that made it easier, and what we did was just connect the splitter and then hook it up to the computer, and then all I had to do was go in and configure. There's a little utility that you run to set your cable company and location, and once I did that, all the channels imported automatically.
Yeah, sweet.
It was great.
You were able to do that configuration with speech.
Yeah.
Along the same lines, has anybody either in the room or online heard of people who are blind using a TiVo at all?
No. I don't know of any that's accessible. Let's see if anybody online does.
I have not successfully used a TiVo. I can't even say that I've tried, but I would like to talk for a couple of minutes about Media Center, because I can tell you what you can do with it and also what problems you could have setting it up. You guys in Massachusetts are very lucky. You have a lot easier time of it than with Comcast than you will with some other cable companies. Media Center, by the way, you can look by show. That question was asked. You certainly can do a search for a show, and that's one of the beauties of it, because you can find the show and you can immediately choose to record it whenever it comes on. If it's a series, there's a button that says record series, and you click that and you forget about it, and whenever that show comes on, it gets recorded. You can also do it by time, or you can say show me what's on now, or you can say show me movies, or show me sports, or show me concerts, or show me, you know, whatever you, the kind of genre you want, and set up your recording schedules months in advance. At least 2 or 3 weeks in advance. The listings, I think, come out every 2 weeks, or they're updated every week, but each week's listings actually, I think, covers 2 weeks, and then they overlap in case there's any changes. And that's another thing. Most of the time, if there's a schedule change with programming, the guide knows about it. Usually your computer will catch it and deal with it, which is really superb. I will say that setting up Media Center, if you're not on Comcast, here in New York City, I'm on Time Warner, and it is much more difficult to get it going, because Time Warner, as do some other cable companies, scramble the channel numbers. So the channel numbers are scrambled. So channel 10 on your cable box may be channel 55 on your TV tuner card. Because of that, the guide will never correspond. So you may be recording CSI Miami, and your TV listing will say Oprah Winfrey. So what you have to do then is to actually use the cable box. So then you have to set up Media Center to talk to your cable box. And Media Center knows about a lot of cable boxes, but it doesn't know about them all. And the first cable box I had, Media Center would not talk to. So I had to go back and get a different cable box, and then through trial and error, get it to talk. Sometimes there's a hex code on the cable box, and if you can get somebody to find it, you can match them up, and then you really have success. But that means you also have to use what's called an infrared blaster to send infrared signals to your cable box from Media Center to change the channels and so forth. And you can get it to work. The other thing is that you want to look for cable boxes with audio outputs in the back, because if you don't and you use the coax, you're not going to, most of the time your cable box doesn't have stereo output through the RF demodulator, so then you've got to run separate audio cables from the cable box to your TV card tuner and turn on its audio inputs so you can get stereo. So it can be quite a project. But if you stick with it, you can get it going.
Do you not have an import feature that you can use to import those channels correctly, the way we did with Comcast? I'm going to have to go back and look at Media Center, because I didn't know that you could look by show, that you could search by show.
Way back when I was still running ViBug, Evan Silver did a demo on it, and he was doing exactly that kind of thing, looking for shows and looking for series and kind of preset all these things.
Right.
If that's still on.
I think that's still on the ViBug website.
Right. I mean, things have probably changed, but it was, he was doing all that kind of stuff. So for people here in the area, that may still be a good program to look at.
Yes, Amy, I can import the listings, absolutely. But even if you pick the proper cable provider, the listings, for example, might say that channel 36 is QVC. If you have your Time Warner cable box connected, indeed, you will turn your cable box to channel 36, and there will be QVC. But if you don't have your cable box connected, and you connect a TV tuner, such as you have in your computer with Media Center, channel 36 will not be QVC whatsoever. It'll be something entirely different. So there is a problem. And you can figure it out to some extent. And you could actually sit there and remap all 800 channels if you really have a mind to. But I think that's pretty much sheer insanity. So what you end up doing is hooking up your cable box merely to make those channel numbers match. There's also an added benefit to that, and that is that the premium channels can be used then if you pay for them, and the box will do the descrambling and you'll get good recordings. As far as searching by show, yes, you can search by show, you can search by genre. There's a search thing in the menus. Also, not all of Media Center is accessible by any stretch, but some parts that are not accessible with WindowEyes or JAWS or System Access to Go are accessible with Narrator, believe it or not. Especially when you're doing the setup, Narrator is one of your best friends.
I wanted to ask you a question, Don. Do you think that those problems will work themselves out as Time Warner phases out analog?
That's hard to say because, frankly, the word problem applies to the consumer. It does not apply to Time Warner. Time Warner is very happy that it works this way. It's by design. They have tried very hard to defeat the use of TV tuner cards and things like that. So for them, it's not a problem. For the consumer, it is. It's hard to say whether those things will work themselves out. Most of that will depend on whether cable companies like Time Warner have a shift in attitude.
Why is it you can't get the premium channels on the other half of the splitter?
No, I can't get the premium channels on my TV tuner card, and I don't know exactly why, but you know what? I don't really care.
And once you get these shows recorded, can you extract out the audio and say put it on a portable device and carry it with you?
I've never tried it.
Yes, there are a couple of products out there, and I don't remember what they are. One of them I think is called, and it was the one I tried and it worked very nicely, but I don't often do it, so I didn't get it. I think it's called MAC, and it worked very nicely to do just that. I highly recommend it because if you're going to save a lot of shows, your hard drive will fill up faster than you can believe because they're really quite large. If you Google the file extension for Media Center shows, which I think is .frms, you will find utilities to convert that format to MP3, etc. And I think MAC was one of those, and I tried it and it worked quite nicely. And of course, if you do that, you'll recover oodles of disk space.
Would SoundTaxi work as well?
No. It's funny. SoundTaxi, and there's another one, what is it, Soundbite or something? Very few of them convert that Media Center format, but there are a couple that do.
Anybody else have any more questions?
It's been wonderful. Bob Gilday, listening out.
I think this is great. This is Dawn in New York, and I just want to say, as Amy said, she's been wanting to do this for years, and so have a lot of us Vibug old-timers and former Vibugger old-timers, and this is just awesome. I'm very, very happy about this, and I can't thank you guys enough.
Okay, well, for now, we're going to close up from here. We will see you in September. And again, if you're not on the Vibug mailing list and you want to be added, please go to the website and join the mailing list so that you can be sure to receive announcements. Thanks very much, and we appreciate your patience online as we all get used to this new exciting frontier. Thanks a lot. Bye now.